Fellow Freedom fans, back with David Allen Carmichael here with the Faith and Freedom Show here on the Eagle 104.3 FM on the Liberty Works Radio Network. Before I went on the break, I will say that somebody made a comment saying that obviously there should be no government. Well, that could be perfect. And then, oh, by the way, when somebody comes up to you and steals your car, make sure you continue to be perfect and to forgive them and to give them your other car. The problem is when your next door neighbor, because there's no government, you see, everybody's going to be perfect. Of course, not everybody's perfect. We get to heaven, there will be one government, and it's already been established, but we're not there yet. So if you're in this world, though, right now, until it's completely fixed, the person next door may be offended, may be attacked. Now, I can forgive the attacker all day long for him for attacking my next door neighbor. My problem is, because I have to love my next door neighbor as myself, while I'm forgiving the attacker, I may have to use deadly force upon them to stop them from injuring my next door neighbor. Now, I have the ability sometimes to do that, and I've exercised that power to love my neighbor as myself in sort of a police action. I've done that, and at that point, I say, well, hey, I know where I'm going if I die, so there's a certain amount of audacity that I have built in with an assurance that ultimately my sins are forgiven because I have acknowledged Jesus as the propitiation for my sin. And I'm in right relationship, and I'm because of that right relationship, I'm motivated to love him and love my neighbor as myself. Now, my problem is that's going to cause me to take a little police action. Now, the problem is I've intervened when there's been 15 against one. And fortunately, I put those in leadership of the little hoodlum group in so much fear for their own safety that they led the others to not beat me up. They sensed that they might go down with me. So I nipped 15 in the bud. There's a point at which I am outside. Now, I will say, with a little divine intervention, you can take on a lot more than that even, all right? But there is a point with this in the natural world where a trained police force is sometimes, and a phone call, a 911 call, is sometimes helpful, and it's good to have what we call government, ministers of God for our good. In Virginia, there's in the Constitution of Virginia, it says the magistrate are basically servants and trustees of the people and shall always be amenable to them, the people. Okay, so yes, with regard to government, it is limited in its boundaries. It's limited in only being able to do that which is right, which is lawful. It's bound by law. It's not free to have power. In fact, it's completely lawless if it's exercising power without authority of law, and we cannot grant it any authority of law that is contrary to God's plan and God's boundaries. Okay, so no government has the authority to put infidels to death. All right? Infidels are infidels. And God's got a plan for changing their heart. Now, we can put them to death for possibly for them killing another man. You know, there are some provisions for that, potentially. But ultimately, vindication will ultimately come for an eternal judgment. We have to believe that to be true. And if we have a little faith in that, there's a lot of wrongs that we won't do, thinking that we've got to take all the retribution upon our own shoulders. So that's theological theory. We can get to that some other time. What I'm going to do is talk about the subject of the 13th through 15th Amendment. Now, the 13th through 15th Amendment were post-Civil War. They were one thing I want to say about the Civil War and slavery. I want to remind folks that taking people who were created in the image of God and for reasons of pragmatism or whatever ism you've got to be able to justify oppressing them, not because of anything they've done, but merely because the amount of melanin in their skin is wicked. And what happened is, I think there's people generally in the South because of pragmatism and political power, and in basically commercial gain, private gain, and also I think idolatry and submitting themselves to basically an inappropriate view of what patriotism is, and hold, they were doing the wrong thing. And when the U.S. Constitution was enacted, it enabled the wrong thing. There was catastrophe bound to happen over slavery. It's the same thing that's happening with regard to the murder of infants in utero in America today. There is a huge catastrophe looming, folks. It's coming our way. We cannot complain when we basically set up a situation where there's something going to come our way. When little babies, because they wear Pampers, become the enemy of those who worship the earth, we've got some problems. We've got some problems, okay? The carbon footprint is not God, is not what we're supposed to be worshiping. Now, watch this. Okay, so that's my perspective. It was because of evil men that the crisis existed. And there's a whole bunch of things that came in with regard to the Civil War I'd love to talk about right now with regard to habeas corpus and things like that and discussing that. And I've done that on a previous show, but we can come back to that. But I'm not going to do that. There's things I could talk about of the danger of having somebody like Lincoln having great charisma, who did things that were in violation of the Constitution, and he justified it in his mind. I'd love to talk about some of the things that he did that were violations of the Constitution that he justified in his mind and somebody pragmatically, you know, dealt with. But that's a different conversation. But I will say there are similarities with regard to Lincoln's his ability to speak and address people and make personal relationship, his letters that he were published and things like that. He became somebody that the people worshipped. I mean, we've got a little statue in Washington that shows up on the back of the penny and things like that. We've got to be careful to not worship the charismatic personality. The same thing is I do want to remind us all that we should not be irreverent about the offices that I think are ordained by God for this country. It's good to hold the person in office accountable to the law and be very bold about it. And eventually there may be things just like in Civil War Day where because I'm saying something today that is contrary to the will of the executive agent in office this day, somebody may come against me with the power of the sword saying that I'm some kind of sedition guy because I disagree with behaviors. And I think they may be unconstitutional and a violation of law and a violation of the oath of office and things like that. Now, if I can say that rationally and bring it up and have substance behind it, I really shouldn't be put in jail, but you never know what'll happen. Wrongs do happen. So I want to go back to the Civil War and just a prelude to this the Amendment 13, 14, and 15 of the Constitution. The Congress of the 1860s, and this is a statement I typed for myself, as I was doing this review, what really impressed me, and I typed this, so I'm going to read it. The Congress of the 1860s through the 1870s understood that they had no power to enforce legislation against the states or state actors without express authority in the Constitution. And then, this is a key thing, and I want you to think about something that's happening in the news today. And then by express and specific positive law by legislation. Okay, I'm going to have to put that in simple terms. During the Civil War and the Reconstruction period, Congress very clearly, it was very clear that they understood that they had no authority whatsoever to enforce legislation against the states or their state actors, government actors, unless it was expressly given an authority in the U.S. Constitution. Once it's in the Constitution, and they put, and you'll see how they said this, that they have the power to enforce this by legislation. Unless they said that, they had no authority to write a law that had any effect inside the boundaries of the states. Even after the Civil War, they understood that, at least for those states that rejoined the United States Commonwealth, so to speak. So they understood that. It's very clear that they understood that. So now I ask the question, how do you have a Congress, an executive officer, who believe that they have the power, without having it expressly granted by the Constitution, to institute something against the states to force, for an example, a national health program? How do they have that authority? Well, they don't. They don't have that. Now, how they're going to police this thing is kind of weird. And that's why we start talking about how much it's going to cost and all this kind of stuff. Forget how much it's going to cost. If it's not really the function of that part of government, it is lawless. It is wicked. It's going to bring forth catastrophe on the lives of everybody in America. It's going to happen because it's wrong. If it's not lawful, it can't be right. Okay, now going back to this comment that I typed about, you know, my study's prelude to 13th through 15th Amendment. They, the Congress at that time, very well understood that even if by way of the 13th through the 15th Amendment had the power to make and enforce positive law, because they basically enabled themselves to have laws that affected the states with regard to citizenship and equal rights, equal U.S. constitutional rights to the people who happen to live in a state by way of the fact that they live in that state that happened to be a member of the United States. So they have dual citizenship, rights or immunities and privileges. Those are types of rights. They had state immunities and privileges, and they have United States privileges and immunities. And I know the guy who runs the radio station goes, yeah, that's what I think. I'm finally coming to his conclusion after years of study on this. So they had both. And what happened is the 13th, 14th, 15th Amendments and, you know, portions thereof, let's just say the 14th Amendment specifically, basically talked about the power of people to have their rights protected then by the federal government to protect you from the state, just as the state has power to protect you from the federal. They're independent things. They're separate. They have separate powers, separate authorities, but they can enforce them according to law. So it gave the federal government the power to now take action against state actors in the states. That's what the 14th Amendment did. Now, the one thing about that, it expressly said the following thing can now be done. We can now uphold somebody's civil rights, so to speak. I don't see anything in Article 1, Section 8 of the U.S. Constitution that gives any power to the federal government to make a welfare state in a state or across the nation. Nowhere. They've got power to have exclusive legislation for Washington, D.C. If they want to make a welfare state out of Washington, D.C. or captured territories, they're free to do that. They're free to do whatever they want. They've got complete discretion to do that in Washington, D.C. or their captured territory, so to speak. But they have no authority at all in the Constitution to make a welfare state out of any state. Now, they could, as I was doing my homework, before certain states ratified the 14th Amendment and rejoined the United States, they were really under military rule, and they were really conquered countries. Those states were conquered countries, and during that conquered country state, the federal government, the Congress at that point, the president under martial law, had all the authority whatsoever to create a welfare state out of Georgia or Mississippi and to enforce whatever they wanted to enforce because they were not sovereign, so to speak, states. They didn't have their jurisdictional boundaries that they were protected from the federal intervention in their laws. So that's something a lot of people don't know about. So what I'm saying is, with regard to national health care, they don't have authority to do it. They don't have an authority to mandate Social Security. And I've had talks with people in the Social Security Administration at a high level who say, well, if the state basically starts using Social Security, then it applies in that state. Yeah, you know what? But not to every human being. The only way it applies to you is an SS-5 form. An SS-5 form. Or, you know, by association, you ask to be employed by somebody who's filled out a SS-4 form. Those are examples. We're going to come back to this very strange conversation on the Eagle 104.3 FM. We shall return. We shall review the U.S. Constitution.